bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 55, The History of Prajumna, Text number 9. I had a look last night and I couldn't work out what number it was. What's that? Well, I was just wondering what the nerf was. Is that nine? Is that, that must be another language, is it? And then he chanted seven. What's that?
I just asked to observe a look of persons in the book.
What is it? That's nine. I think today is the seventh. Maybe that's where the seventh comes in.
The seventh down the bottom.
Yeah, but we're doing verse 9, aren't we?
Yeah. I think it might be Aussie slang, I've never heard of it.
Yeah, is it? Anyway. Nati dhagen kalina. Sakarshnirudhayovana. Janayamasanharinam. Vikshantinam cha vibramam. Nathidargena kalhina. Sakarshnirudhayovana. Janayamasanharinam. Vikshantinam cha vibramam. Nathidargena kalina. Sakarshnirudhajovana. Janayamasanharinam. Vikshantinam cha vibramam. Ati Durgina.
Ati Durgina.
Very long.
Very long.
Kalena.
Kalena.
After a time.
Saha.
He. Karishni. The son of Krishna. Rudha. Attaining. Jovanaha. Full youth. Janayaham. Asa. Generated. Narinam. For the women. Vikshandhinam. He looked upon him. Cha. And. Vibramam. Enchantment. Translation. After a short time, this son of Krishna, Prajumna, attained his full youth. He enchanted all women who gazed upon him. Satam patim padma dalayatekshanam palambabhum naralokasundaram sabidha sata bita vruvekshati pityo pataste tiranga suratai. My dear king, with a bashful smile and raised eyebrows, Mayavati exhibited various gestures of conjugal attraction as she lovingly approached her husband, whose eyes were broad like the petals of a lotus, whose arms were very long, and who was the most beautiful of men. So, of course, to put this into context, Prajumna is the child, the first child of Krishna and his wife Rukmini. And before he was about 10 days old, he was kidnapped by a demon named Sambara, who was very envious of him. And Sambara wanted to kill him, so he threw him in a river. And Pradyumna, of course, was caught in the net. He was actually swallowed by a fish. It's actually, when I was reading this story, a lot of parallels we see sometimes in the Bible. You know, that Noah he lived in a whale. He was also swallowed by a whale. Is that right? And there were some other. So he being cast away in the water. So we see that throughout the course of history. Sometimes little babies are, you know, cast off into the water, thinking that it is an easy way to kill them. Of course, if Krishna wants to protect one, then no one can be killed. And if Krishna wants to kill someone, then no one can be protected. So, miraculously, this little child here was saved, even though he was eaten by a fish. So then, shortly after, a fisherman caught him in a net, caught the fishes in a net, and he was then taken to the place of the demon, Sambhara, because demons like to eat all that sort of nasty stuff, fish and meat, things like that, the demons and the rakshasas. And so then when the cook was cutting open the belly of the fish, he found a little baby inside. And that baby, Pradyumna, was given to Mayavati. And evidently Mayavati was previously his wife before Cupid had been, his body had been burnt to ashes by Lord Shiva and had entered within the body of the Pradyumna expansion of Krishna. And so, as Srila Prabhupada states in the Krishna book, that miraculously he grew up very quickly. So there's a lot of very amazing statements there. And for a lot of people this would be difficult to accept, to conceive of. But if we consider that this is the firstborn child of Krishna, of God, you would expect that, you know, God's children would be involved in some, you know, quite unusual pastimes, you know, something a little out of the ordinary. So this is certainly out of the ordinary, but strange things have happened in this world. People do miraculously survive under very unusual circumstances if it is the will of the Lord. There's one, I was reading the history of volcanoes one time, doing an assignment with my daughter, and there was this, in history, there's this one place where they had a volcanic eruption, and everyone was killed except one person. Now that one person, the previous night, he'd been thrown in jail. Those jails, the very thick, stone walls. Everyone was killed in the whole place, except this one person. A Krishna had thrown him into jail and he survived. Historical fact. So, things, if Krishna wants to, protect someone, even under, very, miraculous circumstances. Sometimes we see that with little children also in earthquakes. Many times you see that, thousands of people will die, and this, some tiny little baby who's, barely just been born will just, they'll pull them out of the rubble and they're just fine, no scratches, just, by the will of God. Unable, of course, to you know, fend for themselves. They wouldn't even know what was going on, simply by the will of the Lord. So here we see that Prajumna has been saved because his father happens to be God. It's always handy. And he has grown up very, very quickly, miraculously, and attained full youth, and immediately began to enchant all the women who gazed upon him with his beauty. So his previous wife from another time, Mayavati, who has you know, is in the house as a maidservant of the demon Sambara, by chance, she has become very, very much attracted. Of course, Narada Muni has explained to her the circumstances, you know, that this particular boy is your previous husband. So she was very eager to look after him and have him grow up. And so she has approached him with bashful smiles and raised eyebrows. I wonder what that means. And Mayavati, and she exhibited various gestures of conjugal attraction as she lovingly approached her husband, whose eyes were broad like the petals of a lotus, whose arms were very long, and who was the most beautiful of men. So, of course, Prajumna, he was also very beautiful. Being the son of Krishna, he very, very much resembled Krishna. He was so much like Krishna, and who is the original, the full manifestation of beauty. So in the purport here, describes Mayavati exhibited her conjugal attraction for Prajumna even before revealing their true identities. Naturally, this caused some confusion at first, as described in the following verse. Tammaha bhagavan karsne matasthe matiranyata matirbhavan natikramya avatase kaminyata. Lord Prajumna told her, generally Prajumna is, you know, when we speak of Prajumna, he has a capital letter, for, you know, the word you or him, because they're referring to him in Srimad Bhagavatam as a direct expansion of Krishna, part of the Chaturvyuha principally. And yet this pastime also is going on with the Jiva Tattva of Cupid, who is ended within his form as well. Lord Prajumna told her, "O mother, your attitude has changed. You are overstepping the proper feelings of a mother and behaving like a lover." So you can imagine how. Yeah. Of course, in Kali Yuga, you know, that probably wouldn't be so surprising. But in this time, it was very, very bewildering to Prajumna. Ratiravacha bhavandarayana sitaha sambarena hito grihat aham te dikritta padni rati karamo bhavan prabho. Rati said, "You are the son of Lord Narayan and were kidnapped from your parents parents' home by Sambara. I, Rati, am your legitimate wife, O master, because you are Cupid." Isha Twaniradasham Sindha Akshipach Chambaro Saraha Macho Grasitta Rudaraha Itaraha Prato Bhavan Prabho. "That demon, Sambara, threw you into the sea when you were not even 10 days old, and a fish swallowed you. Then, in this very place, we recovered you from the fish's abdomen, O Master." Tam imam jahe dharadavisham Durjayam Shatram Atmanaha Maya Sita Vidam Tam Cha Vayabe Mohana Adivir. Now kill this dreadful Sambara, your formidable enemy. Although he knows hundreds of magic spells, you can defeat him with bewildering magic and other techniques. Parisochati te mata kurari bhagata pacha putra sneha kula dhina vivatsa gori vatura. Your poor mother, having lost her son, cries for you like a kurari bird. She is overwhelmed with love for her child, just like a cow that has lost its calf. Very nice description here. This is something that the demons do not consider, is that animals such as cows, they are living conscious beings who have different feelings, emotional as well as physical. They, one thing when I was on the farm, or when we had the Sunday feast, which is this Sunday, I like to go. But we like to take people up and introduce them to meet the cows. Come and meet the family. And for people who haven't been to a Hare Krishna farm, of course, they're always quite surprised that they all have names. There's Chintamani and there's this one and one like that. And personalities, so you start to tell them about their different personalities. Some there's Shama Dasi, who, that very black cow. And she always likes to keep to herself. She's a bit ill at the moment. She has a bad leg. But even when she was very healthy, a little bit younger, always kept to herself, always 100 yards in another paddock. She never mixes, so much. And a bit of a loner. And, you see, some of them are quite rebellious. Some of them, if you put up a fence or even, run a bit of tape, they won't cross it. Others, no matter what you do, they're going to jump over, oh, the grass is better on that side, and, no one's keeping me in a fence. They have that sort of personality. And friendships, some of the blokes, some of the males, they have their mates that they always hang around with, a bit playful. And others, there's some that they don't like so much, keep away, keep in your own side of the paddock, And, mother and daughter sort of relationships, classic, of course, is Chintamani and Sarabi, who passed away, always together, inseparable, mother and daughter. And, if you went near the mother, then the daughter would immediately chase you away, and if you went near the daughter, then the mother would come after you like that. And that they were never apart, always. Of course, now there's just the daughter, so she's a bit sad. They cry. Have you ever seen cows cry? They have tears, of course, these days very, very difficult for cows because demons, they like to take the baby calves away from the mothers, and because they like that sort of soft. They're such demons that they think they don't even want to bother chewing too much. They don't want to put they don't mind killing the cows. They don't want to have to go to the effort to chew too hard, so I think it's a nice soft meat, very easy to chew. There's no consideration for the cows, and just completely self-centered. But yes, you know, the cows, that you'll see them, they become very sad. You can hear in their mooing, and you know, they'll shed tears, and you can see you know, signs of fretting, you know, when they're separated from other, you know, relatives or friends at that. So it's a very nice description here of Rukmini being overwhelmed with love for her child, just like a cow that has lost its calf. Pravashivam dadavhijam prajunaya mahatmane mayavati mahamayam salvamaya vinashinam. Sukadeva Goswami continued, speaking thus, Mayavati gave to the great soul Prajumna the mystic knowledge called Mahamaya, which vanquishes all other deluding spells. Sacha sambharam abhyecha samjugaya samabhyayat avishayastam ekshepam sanjanayam kalim. Prajumna approached Sambhara and called him to battle, hurling intolerable insults at him to foment a conflict. So dikshipta dravacho bhi parahatta rivhodaga nischakrama gadapanir amrishatamra lochanaha. Offended by these harsh words, Sambhara became as agitated as a kicked snake. He came out, club in hand, his eyes red with rage. Garam avijja tadasa prajunaya mahatmane prakshipya vanadhandhadham vajja nishpesha nituram. Sambhara whirled his club swiftly about and then hurled it at the wise Prajumna, producing a sound as sharp as a thunder crack. Tam apatanyam bhagavan prajunno gadaya gadham apasya satchave kuddaha prahinot svagadam nripaha. As Sambhara's club came flying towards him, Lord Prajumna knocked it away with his own. Then, O king, Prajumna angrily threw his club at the enemy. Sacha mayam samasuccha dhichim maya dharshitam mumuchesta mahyam bharsham karishna vaiha yaso sadaha. Resorting to the black magic of the Daichas, taught to him by Maya Dhanava, Sambhara suddenly appeared in the sky and released a downpour of weapons upon Krishna's son. Bhajmanostra varshinha rukminyaya maharata satvatmikam mahavijham sarvamayopamaradinam. Harassed by this rain of weapons, Lord Rukminaya, the greatly powerful warrior, made use of the mystic science called Mahamaya, which was created from the mode of goodness and which could defeat all other mystic power. Tato Goika Gandalabha Paisacharagarakshiki Prayamta Sataso Daicha Karishni Vihadamayatsata. The demon then unleashed hundreds of mystic weapons belonging to the Guyakas, Gandharvas, Pisachas, Uragas, and Akshasas. But Lord Karishni, Prajumna, struck them all down. Nishitam Vashim Hudam Yaha Sag Kiritim Sa Kundalam Sambarasya Sidaha Kayat Tambara Smar Svoja Saharat. Drawing his sharp-edged sword, Prajumna forcefully cut off Sambara's head, complete with red moustache, helmet and earrings. Akiri Manho Tivijhai Stuvadi bi kusumotkarai pariyaya yambara chadinyaha bhuram nitto vihayasa. As the residents of the higher planet showered Prajumna with flowers and chanted his praises, his wife appeared in the sky and transported him through the heavens back to the city of Dwarka. Andaha padavaram rajan lalana sata sankulam vivesha padnya guganad vijyoteva balahaka. O King, Lord Pradyumna and his wife resembled a cloud accompanied by lightning as they descended from the sky into the inner quarters of Krishna's most excellent palace, which were crowded with lovely women.
Tam drisva jalada shamham pita kosya vasasam palamba bahum tam raksham susmitam ruchiranam shalankrita mukambojam nila vakralaka vivi krishnam matvastriyo hrita nililyus tatra tatraha.
The women of the palace thought he was Lord Krishna when they saw his dark blue complexion, the colour of a rain cloud, his yellow silk garments, his long arms and red-tinged eyes, his charming lotus face adorned with a pleasing smile, his fine ornaments and his thick curly blue hair. Thus the women became bashful and hid themselves here and there.
Avadariha sanarishad Velokashan yena yoshitaha Upaj hagno pramuditaha sastri ratnam suvishmitaha.
Gradually, from the slight differences between his appearance and Krishna's, the ladies realized he was not the Lord. Delighted and astonished, they approached Pradyumna with his consort, who was a jewel among women.
Atta tatra sita panghi udarbi valgu mashini asmadat svasatam nastam snehasvata fayodara.
Seeing Pradyumna, sweet-voiced, dark-eyed Rukmini remembered her lost son, and her breast became moist out of affection.
Ko nivayam nara bhaduryaha kashyava kamalikshanaha dutta kayava jattare kayam labda taninava.
Srimati Rukmini Devi said, "Who is this lotus-eyed jewel among men? What man's son is he, and what woman carried him in her womb? And who is that this woman he has taken as his wife?"
Mamala chapyatmajo nasto nito yaha satikaha krihat itatulyaha vayo rupo yati javati kutrachit.
If my lost son, who was kidnapped from the maternity room, was still alive somewhere, he would be of the same age and appearance as this young man.
Katam tanenha sampraptam sarupyam saringaha danvanaha akritaya akrityava yavegatas svarha hasavalokanai.
But how is it that this young man so much resembles my own Lord Krishna, the wielder of saranga, and his bodily form and his limbs, in his gait and the tone of his voice and in his smiling glance?
Sa eva va bhavendu nam yame garbe dutor vakaha amushmin pratiradika vamahas purati me bhujaha.
Yes, he must be the same child I bore in my womb, since I feel great affection for him and my left arm is quivering.
Evam imam samanayam aidarabhyam devaki sitaha devak anakandu dubhyam uttamaha sloka agamat.
So it's interesting here that Rukmini Devi, she has this intuitive feeling that this is her son. Of course, it is backed up by, you know, this striking resemblance, almost identical resemblance of Pradyumna. Not just in his bodily features, but even, you know, the way he, you know, would smile, and, you know, the tone of his voice and what have you, you know, the look in the eye, certain things. So that is there, but there is also her intuition is confirmed
by this trembling in the left arm. So, you know, with intuition, a lot of people rely, you know, especially in this day and age, they rely heavily on intuition, but they actually don't know how to confirm it. And quite often, their intuition is wrong. Sometimes it is right, and sometimes it is wrong, but they never know when. See, but intuition is very important, but it must be confirmed. You know, the same astrologically. There are many people, you know, who practice astrology, and they rely very, very heavily upon intuition, you know, when they're making an interpretation. But if that intuition is not confirmed, you know, mathematically by the astrological, information, then that intuition should be discarded. You know, there are many psychics these days, and sometimes they have, you know, at certain stages of their life, they have strong intuitive feelings that prove to be very correct. And from that, they decide that every intuitive feeling is also correct for the rest of my life. And that's wrong. Because, you know, sometimes, especially in this day and age, people become very confused. And yes, they may have some good intuition at certain stages, and then at other times, they may be wishing that something was, you know, that particular thing, and confuse that with intuition. Confuse, or I am desiring. You know, one time I heard on the radio one psychic, and she's supposed to be one of the greatest psychics in Australia. And people were ringing this psychic from all over Australia on the live radio show. And, you know, I listened for about an hour, and, you know, they brought it on. And people would ring up, and the majority of them were like, you know, I'm in a relation, I'm married, but I'm thinking of, leaving, you know, my partner, and, there's this other person. I listened to the psychic, and, you know, she probably broke up a couple of dozen marriages and destroyed the lives of, you know, dozens and dozens of children. You know, I don't think once she actually said, no, you know, don't do it. It was like, yeah, look, I'm getting the feeling that, yeah, you know, this is good, you know. And I'm sitting there cringing, thinking, what about the kids, you know? What about, you know, are you spot on with this, you know, you... And they think, yeah, great, thanks, you know, here's this famous psychic, if it's coming from her, she's on the radio. But what is a confirmation? So, a proper psychic, they know how to confirm things. Just like there is in astrology also, there is a science taught by Lord Shiva, where you can, an astrologer confirms a question that they, when we breathe through our nostrils at any one time, we're either breathing through, you know, the left or the right, or both. One is called pingala, one has some other name, and when they're breathing through both, they have specific names. So if someone asks you a question, the astrologer will detect, you know, which side of the nostril the air is coming through, and they can understand it is a confirmation or a negation of the question. Or, you know, if they're breathing through both, you know, or whether there will be good results from what the person is asking, or whether there will not be, and then they will astrologically, you know, confirm that. And there are many other things, you know, you can, the astrologer will see the way that person is breathing when they approach them, which direction they came from. There are certain omens, auspicious and inauspicious, that the astrologer recognises, and therefore there are things that are confirming. So there is use of intuition, there is confirmation of that intuition, and there is astrological data like this. But it is a very, very dangerous thing, as many people do in this age, and that is to say, yes, I have good intuition. So that may be, but it's not that that intuition is infallible. And if someone is going to make major decisions based upon intuition, they may make some terrible mistakes. Recently I actually saw that there was one lady, you know, they have this thing where, you know, I think about every 18 minutes in Australia someone goes missing. You know, there's something like thousands and thousands of missing persons at any one time in Australia, and every 18 minutes someone else goes missing. So anyway, there was this one lady, and she, going through the internet, she saw her long-lost daughter on the internet. And, you know, she sort of saw, you know, the face almost, you know, sort of a bit of an angle. And she was convinced, and, you know, they looked, there's this scar, there's this mark, that, you know, and she was absolutely convinced. And anyway, the police went round and they said to her, "You so-and-so's daughter." And, "No, I'm not so-and-so's daughter, I'm such and such." Anyway, they went back and the lady, "No, no, no, that's my daughter. You know, I can feel it, you know, it's my intuition. She's my daughter, I can see it, I can recognise, you know." And her other daughter was saying, "Yeah, that's her, that's my sister." So anyway, they went round to see her, and when they saw her, even though she had a striking resemblance to her daughter, but they found that she wasn't her daughter. But her intuition, she was convinced 100% as a mother. You know, generally we trust a mother's intuition, right? And a mother would generally recognise her own daughter. But, you know, so intuition can fail even the best, even mothers. You know? And, you know, similarly when, you know, sometimes people ask me to do an astrology chart, and I always ask them, "So do you have the time?" And they say, "Yes." And they give me the time, and then I say to them, "So how do you know that that's the time?" And they say, "Well, my mother told me." And I think, uh-oh. You know. And from experience, you know, mothers are notoriously, you know, not correct at marking what time it is when they're giving birth. It's like the last thing they're thinking of, you know. "Oh, you know, what time it is." You know? It's like they're in the middle of giving birth. You know, it's like the whole day just somehow can become a little bit confusing. They don't stop to look at the time. You know, even the midwives and the doctors who are supposed to take the time sometimes get a little spaced out. And, you know, they're sort of, "Oh, gee, what time is that?" You know, it must have been about 20 past. So, yeah, so, you know, this is a very important point here. We see that she had the intuition, the facts appeared to be there, but there was some confirmation, and so she began to become very... So, Ivam, Mimambasama, Naiham, Padar Bham, Deviki, Sitaha, Deviki, Hanakandu, Tu Bham, Utamaha, Sloka, Hagamat. As Queen Rukmini conjectured in this way, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, arrived on the scene with Vasudev and Devaki. So, I'm going to leave a bit of a cliffhanger here. I'm going to leave a little bit more. There's a few verses left. You'll all have to come back tomorrow to hear it. But just before we finish up, perhaps we could speak a little bit about Pradyumna. Some other very wonderful... Pradyumna, being the son of Krishna, he has a relationship of servitude. And there are actually four different types of servants. You know, some are like appointed servants, like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. There are others, you know, like Parikit and, you know, Bhima, that, you know, they're followers of the Lord. and had that service attitude towards the Lord. There are those who are very close associates, like Uddhava, and they're advisors of the Lord. And there are sons, like Pradyumna. So there are different types of service, but of course this being the son of God is a very wonderful situation, because they always feel very much protected by their father. And it is also, there we can learn such a wonderful mood of servitorship, how to serve God, by looking at the Son of God, Prajumna. Sometimes people say that, God has only one son, Jesus. But here we read he has, so many in his pastimes, and ultimately all living entities are, the children of God. And here Pradyumna is described that when he was, they had such love and respect for their father. And when Pradyumna was in the presence of Krishna, he would hardly say a word. And practically he wouldn't say anything. He would never speak loudly. Never ever. Never raise his voice, even if he was talking with other people. If his father was present, always speaking very, it's like children today just run around screaming, talk over the top of their parents, swear at them, whatever, same thing, because their parents are not God. But anyway, still, we from Vedic culture, we learn, the best, the proper way that to deal between son and father. That is the proper way. And everything else, is, relationships should aim. We can never imitate that. But certainly the relationships between parents and children should aim towards these relationships which are demonstrated by God. He would, when he was with Krishna, his father, he would always look at Krishna's feet. It's not like he would eyeball him. You eyeballing me, there's that saying, He would look at Krishna's lotus feet, and he always had tears of love in his eyes. And if there was anything disturbing, he would never ever show Krishna, that there's some disturbance. He would always appear before his father in a very pleasant demeanor, and which is interesting. And even as devotees, we have our parents, and of course not all of them are devotees, many of them are not, but at the same time, if we don't behave properly with our parents, then how will our children know how to behave with us who are devotees? So we have to demonstrate, and I remember once when I was in New Zealand, and I was talking with Mahavishnu Swami, and he asked me, "So how's your father?" And I said, "Oh, I haven't seen my father in 10 years." Almost like in an offhand way. He said, "Oh, that's not good." And I said, "Oh, but my father's not a devotee." He said, "It doesn't matter." He said, "You should offer him service." I said, "Oh, but, he's a meat eater." "That doesn't matter. He's your father, and you agree, Hester. You should offer him service." So, it was an interesting, it took me by surprise. But, throughout the years, of course, I've seen the wisdom in that, because of course, if I neglect my parents, then my children will neglect their parents, who happens to be me. So they have to have some example, as devotees, we're setting an example, And of course, you know, if we can show, you know, some degree of respect and proper behavior to parents who are perhaps not even so deserving, then you know, then certainly you know, children who, you know, have good parents will think, well, gee, you know, I should do something nice for my parents. So very nice attitude displayed there. And of course, Prajumna also, you know, he never discussed the sons of Krishna. They never discussed Krishna's conjugal pastimes. You know, and yeah, they had a very much very respectful and you know, wonderful serving attitude towards Krishna. If something to them was like nectar, and Krishna wasn't pleased with it, they would discard it as if it was poison. And if something was like poison and Krishna, you know, was interested, then they would take that up like nectar. And I remember last time we were discussing about you asked me the question about if you know, if our eternal relationship is not in the conjugal mood, then, you know, and yet we seem to be being pushed in that mood of conjugal relationship, and yet what happens if our mood, eternal relationship happened to be in servitorship? So, and here we see, you know, this example of servants like Prajumna, that they never discussed the conjugal pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna. So how do we understand that? And we should understand that, you know, any child has a pretty good general understanding of what their parents, you know, their nature. They would understand, you know, here is my father Krishna. The women love him. You know, so he has 16,108 wives. And, you know, as I'm passing through the palace, I see, you know, you know, he's always saying such beautiful romantic words to them. You know, he's a romantic. So it's not as if they don't understand, you know, like have a general understanding. And you know, they must have heard some whispers about Krishna and the gopis. You know, the understanding is there, but it's not just a free for all, you know, topic of conversation. And you know, which is sort of, it's a good mood for us also to imbibe that, yes, we do learn in a very general sense, you know, that Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, his dealings with, you know, Rukmini and the queens, what have you. Even, you know, a lot of knowledge that we have through Srimad Bhagavatam, it is still more general. And that is okay. That is like, you know, the sons. That, you know, that is, you know, acceptable. But to sort of delve too deep into, you know, how does Krishna kiss them, and, you know, like that. If, you know, devotees are, you know, not really understanding their spiritual relationship with Krishna properly and haven't even developed a proper service attitude, that is certainly not good. So, you know, to overly discuss the intimate pastimes, especially conjugal pastimes of Krishna, you know, with the gopis or with the queens, general understanding is good. To get, you know, to be poke our nose a little bit, you know, too much can be certainly is that we can enter into like sahaja mentality, so we have to be a little careful. But you know, that's not to say that we don't, you know, have a good general understanding of who Krishna is and that he is, you know, love personified. You know, it's not that we just sort of never think about that, because if we, you know, we should understand in general that all varieties of love exist in the spiritual world, and if we don't understand that, we'll be attracted to a variety of love in this world and we'll be captivated by illusion and, you know, continually recycle in this world of birth and death. So we should definitely understand that, you know, Krishna is the reservoir of all loving relationships, and they exist in the spiritual world. It's not impersonal, and we should have a good, you know, firm understanding, convinced about that. And, you know, but at the same time, we should be careful about jumping into, you know, imagining prematurely what our relationship may be with Krishna, and then delving too much into information and discussing that which we're not really eligible for. So that's something else that we can learn there from Prajumna. So if anyone has any other questions or comments.
I wanted to ask about the intuition. Would you say intuition is coming from the super soul actually?
Yes. Hmm. From the super soul, yes. And you know, we also have strong impressions imprinted on our heart. So, you know, if we have, you know, in a previous life, for instance, you know, in a previous life, if we have, you know, read Bhagavad Gita over and over and over and over and over again, then it's that impression is stamped on our heart. So then when we take our next life, there is some intuitive understanding also as to what is stamped on our own heart, that, you know, what I'm hearing is not correct. And then you come across the Bhagavad Gita and say, ah, that's what I've always been, you know, looking for. So there are impressions stamped upon our heart, and also, you know, the definitely the super soul sometimes, you know, giving us, you know, feeding knowledge to us, you know, as well, and reminding us of things, yeah.
I was kind of trying to work out for myself, what's the difference between the intuition and the mental platform, you know? Because I kind of feel I'm often also acting with the evidence of intuition. Mm. And I kind of observe that intuition is then real intuition when you don't even get on the mental platform, you don't even think much. You just kind of somehow feel, yes, this has to be done, or it's like this, and you just automatically you just do it. Without getting on the mental platform, without contemplating, should I or should I, and so on. So, would you confirm that? Or?
Intuition is like getting the whole answer, the whole picture, all in one go. Right? So, in other words, for instance, the way to understand something without intuition is you take each piece of the puzzle, you gradually put it together, and you get a logical understanding, you know, when all the pieces fit together. Intuition means that we just bang all at once and get a, you know, the whole picture, the whole answer, just in one go.
That's
without going through all the processes. It just sort of jumps into our head before we've gone through the process, and then we think about it and think, you know, then you do the calculation, you think, yep, that works. You know, about intuition, Srila Prabhupada, you know, once stay he said, if in doubt, don't do it. That's intuition. Right? If there's a doubt, don't do it. That's good intuition. Intuition also, one devotee asked him about intuition, and Srila Prabhupada was sort of discussing on the point that, you know, when you become proficient at something, then you're able to do something intuitively. Right? So sometimes people want to do their devotional service intuitively. Let me just instinctively serve Krishna, you know, according to my intuition. That works on a higher level when the devotee has become very proficient in devotional service, and then intuitively they can go about their devotional service. If someone tries to intuitively go about their devotional service before becoming proficient in, you know, all the aspects of devotional service, they'll get themselves into trouble. In the same way, if you're driving your car, you know, if you get in the car and say, intuitively I'm just going to work out which is the gears and, you know, which is the pedal for the brake, and, you know, you'll be in a lot of trouble. You have to become proficient in what is a brake, what is a clutch, what is the gear stick, you know, how do you steer this thing, how fast should it go around the corner. When you're proficient in that, then you can drive instinctively, intuitively, like that. So intuition is something that has, you know, intuition generally, you know, we get flashes of intuition, but if someone does a lot of things intuitively, they should first be expert at that particular thing, you know, especially devotional service.
Also, it's probably a question of purity, isn't it?
And purity.
Because they have so many other material motivations, then they kind of block that intuition.
Definitely, yeah. People have so much rubbish in their minds and hearts, and they so much rubbish, so much noise, that they can't hear the super soul feeding information to them. Jai, all good, Srila Prabhupada. So just one more quote in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, Krishna says, when one controls his mind and senses, the super soul is automatically reached. So when one controls the mind and senses, that purity is there. Intuition, spiritual intuition is there. Jai, all good, Srila Prabhupada.